CliffCentral.com.
Yes, indeed. CliffCentral.com, Wednesday morning. We were talking about crypto and creativity and all kinds of crazy stuff before 7 this morning. We got Blind History on the way for you a little bit later on. It's going to be really cool. Rice Beck says, I sound intelligent to my friends talking about Margaret Thatcher and cryptocurrency. Wow. She says, watching Gareth forces you to be as intelligent as he is. Well, I'm not intelligent. I know what you're talking about, but thanks. That's nice to see. The Blind History episodes are magnificent, says Michael. Bite-sized history through easily digestible conversation. Well, that's what we're trying to do. And, you know, neither Anthony nor I are experts. Neither of us have necessarily got qualifications in history. I studied it at university, but, you know, the stuff I studied at university is certainly not anything that's come up in an episode of Blind History. But you don't have to be an expert. If you really care about a subject and you're really interested in a subject, then you want to know as much as you can and you want to tell other people as much as you can about it. And that's what I feel like these episodes are. And really, it's just me and Ant being history nerds and sitting talking to each other about these amazing people who've, you know, long since died. And it's great. I love doing Blind History. It's one of my favorite things. And I get super excited when I know there's an episode we have to record, because it doesn't feel like work when I'm researching it, you know. It's just lots of fun. And there's still so many people we have to cover. I mean, you take your pick. You can never run out. So maybe there'll be a season 7, and who knows? It's all going to carry on. But it's great. Thank you. And, you know, there'd be no point in making these if no one was listening to them. So thank you for that. Anyway, Gail Force says, Mbulelo will forever be a lonely bachelor. Well, you think that's
just
true,
bachelor.
Mbulelo? Do you think about that?
Not lonely, but bachelor maybe. No, who knows? No. I'm always open to change. No, I take no pride in being a bachelor. I'm not like stuck in this position. No, being the best years of my life was being in a relationship, for sure.
But would it bother you if that was your future, to be a bachelor?
Not at all. No, which is why I say not lonely. But like right now, for what I'm doing right now, oh, prime time. I'm loving it. I'm just loving it. Absolutely loving it.
I don't know, hey. I don't know. I think there might be I used to feel that way, but I think there might be a time in my life where I don't want to be on my own anymore.
No, I'm open to change. Like I say, the best years of my life were when I was in a relationship, for sure. For sure. But right now, I'm moving and grooving, and I'm winning right now. So, yeah, not lonely, but I may be a bachelor forever.
I would say up to now, the best times of my life have been when I've been single, just because there's this ultimate freedom. You can do what you want. Your time is your own. You don't owe any connection. Independent agent. Kind of, if you want to read, you want to sleep, you want to work, you want to stay up late, you want to go to sleep early, you can do whatever you want. And that's part of kind of why I like being single. But there is also a lot to be said for companionship. And there's a lot to be said for kind of sharing your life with someone else and going on holidays together and, you know, doing stuff like that, which I've always enjoyed when I have been in a relationship. So I don't know. I'm keeping it open like you are. I'm keeping it open and we'll see what happens.
You know what?
I'm not in any hurry.
Yeah. You know, I'm super picky about that department. Like, I've also got non-negotiables in that world as well. And so for me, it was always that person came into my life and amplified.
Dude, that's what a surprise. What a surprise that you would be that person.
Yeah. So there was no like loafing, you know, from those partners. They were always, I was always shooting out of my league with both of the girlfriends I've had. So they were always pushing me, like, do more, be better, you know? Like, one was a particle physicist, the other's a surgeon, and they both, like, skied and snowboarded for their country. So it was like wow. I always had to be on as well. And I like that. So they added to my life instead of, being into Kardashian bullshit.
I'm going to ask Simpiwe to be like an amateur psychologist here. Do you think Mbulelo and I will ever like settle down and get married or be in a relationship? Or do you think, like Gail says, that Mbulelo will end up a lonely bachelor?
Well, Gareth, I would have to say that I think
no, go.
I have a bit more faith in you securing and being in a relationship than I do for Mbulelo. I've heard how he just talks about relationships and his standards are so high. And, you know, the mere 20-something years I've been alive, I'm just like, yo, dude, who is going to take all these boxes? And I think she's out there somewhere, but also I'm like, yo, dude, I think, yeah, you should just, I'm that person. Just be okay with just being you, being single. I think that's your future for the next couple of years.
Right of reply, Mbulelo.
Fair dinkum. Fair dinkum. You know, if that's how Simpiwe sees me, and that's what I'm going to have to live with, Gareth. A lonely bachelor, you know, with nothing to live for. Mm-hmm. So
I will say this: if you did ever get into a relationship, I'd want to be friends with that girl because she must be incredible. Like she is, she's on another level, doing other things to have you wanting to commit to her. Shem, yeah, that, you guys should do the full YouTube thing, full like his and hers, meet my girlfriend, meet my boyfriend. Like I'd want to know everything about the relationship you and her.
See,
like I would be like, oh wow,
people,
he would never tell us. No, never tell us any of that.
And even more so, people like Simpiwe are what I loved about both of my girlfriends is stay away from those kinds of people, like a chatty. Oh, what's he up to? Oh my gosh, is he really like that? What I loved about both of them, there's no Instagram nonsense. It's just we dating, our families know, we keep it moving. There's people like Simpiwe want to chat. Oh, Jesus. Jesus Christ. Oh, the worst.
Trey.
Okay. Have you seen you? Of course I'd be curious to be like, girl, like, Yassi, you have to stomach this all day, every day. How are you coping? Like, wait. Like, what? Really? And then you find out that she's also on another level of crazy, and you're like, I see why you guys are dating. I now see it. That's the only reason why I'd want to know.
This is the I mean, there are many more kinds of personality, but there are two kinds of people here, obviously, and we've already had you two in front of Dr. Hanan, so let's not go too deep into that. But I can tell that the things that interest Simpiwe are very seldom overlapping with the things that interest Mbulelo. Carl says, the only woman I can think of who would have enough in common with Mbulelo would be Angela Merkel, but she's taken, I think. Guy's going to die single. Shame.
Yeah, that is a crying shame. You're dead right. Merkel, tomorrow, I'm off to Germany. We're living in Berlin. Gray suit all day.
Gail Force says, I always said I would be happily single. Met someone at 39 and now we're married. Never thought I would.
Fantastic.
Wow. That's great. Keenan says, Mbulelo has so much self-hate, like a product of apartheid. Such a tired puss. Yes, that's nice, Keenan. Thanks. Keenan's nice. Yeah. Don't take any of that personally.
No. He probably wanted to type, don't take this personally. So see, it'll be okay,
Jim,
Keenan.
Jim's got the other point of view. He says, after coming out of a shit show of a marriage, being on my own in peace is a result. Okay, well, good.
Look, I'm a big proponent of a pleasure shared is a pleasure doubled. I really believe in that. I can't stress enough how much whenever I hear people are in relationships or like my friendships are so important to me, you know, I believe in few, but quality. I'm big on it, man. I hope this sounds a little Oprah like. I hope Jim can find somebody else. I hope it's not over because it's awesome to share your life with people, man. I think anyway.
Well, Daniela says here, Mbulelo, if these exes of yours are so amazing, why are you not with one of them? You can't hold everyone to their standard. No, you know what, Daniela, I'm going to just jump in here before Mbulelo answers that. But this idea that something has to last forever is just so childish. Like nothing lasts forever. And a relationship might have its purpose for a year or two. Maybe you have different like goals in life. Maybe you have different paths that you have to follow. Maybe you have to stay in a different country to them. You never know what could happen. And this idea that a relationship is only successful, it keeps going until you're dead, is ridiculous.
Yeah.
People are only in your life for a time.
Yeah.
Be grateful for that time. Stop trying to make things last forever.
No, and I can answer that. I mean, the first one, I was an absolute dickhead back then. So I'm actually... without being funny, I'm super glad that she's like super happy now, has a kid, great surgeon. She's really one of Slovakia's leading surgeons, and she lives in Germany, so she's awesome. And then the other one lives in Denmark, and it wasn't acrimonious, but like I wasn't ready to move to Denmark at the time when we were dating. So it's just what it is. But nothing, there's nothing like, yeah, first one I was just a prick. The second one, just, you know, Denmark, she wasn't ready to move to SA, and she just graduated from Oxford doing particle physics. So she had to move and groove, you know.
Jesus.
So just timing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Heinz says MKT is a man for quality, not quantity. So there's a compliment for you after a much less kind thing being said a little bit earlier. Someone keen. Yeah.
Listen, my mother always said, don't get too high on praise, don't get too low on the insult. So it's all right, Keenan, I'll be all right. I keep it steady, Eddie.
A lot of people would have had a happier life if they'd discovered Mbulelo much earlier.
Look, guys. Do you guys know Mbulelo? Nothing is safe with Mbulelo. Like, if there's one thing I've learned is don't tell Mbulelo anything, because everyone will.
Let me tell you, though.
About it on the show, he'll talk about it on his show. Like, don't tell Mbulelo. Yes! There's a reason why he's able to keep his life private, because he shares everybody else's life.
So, I got to the office yesterday, and Mbulelo and a bunch of the guys from his sports show were all hanging around, and it was Barrett's birthday. Mbulelo loves other people's gossip, hey? Yo, he was telling me stories about everybody else's gossip, but he doesn't like his own. So maybe Simpiwe is making a point here. And you guys were all laughing, and it was like the most fun place to be yesterday. There was a whole lot of action going on.
But people love to
and
chat.
Like, Mbulelo would be like, No. Mbulelo would be like, yo, Gareth, did you hear Barrett's story? Oh, let me tell you about this. Wait, you got to hear this. And he's gone. He's telling you the whole story. And then before you know it, Rina will walk in. Rina, did you hear
that? Yeah. Yeah, don't pretend you don't like a little bit of gossip. You do. I love it.
Yeah. Whenever it's someone else's, it's always great.
Yeah, so the story that
Mbulelo told me, and I have Barrett's permission to talk about this, but he was he'd just broken up with his boyfriend like a couple of it was a long time ago, he said, and he was driving and he was bitching about his ex to some other person, and then by mistake he sent that WhatsApp that he was bitching about his ex to his ex about, like, oh, he was a pain in the ass anyway, and he wasn't any fun to be with, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, that has got to be one of the worst things you can do. You know, these things, these phones, yes, they can cause trouble for us, hey?
But there's another level to it. So he, not only did he send it to the ex about how I'm so relieved about that, but the ex was driving behind him to come to his house to pick stuff up. To end the breakup. And then he got a 2-hour lecture about it. Like not only have we now broken up and it's awful, now that person lecturing Barrett at his own house to say, you can only imagine the types of things that were being said. So what a story. I thought, oh my goodness. Like, breaking up's awful enough. And then now,
but that's where, like, once you've broken up, you don't have to sit through a lecture from your ex.
At your house.
Like, yeah, that's how I felt about you. Let's move on.
But
you see, he's a much nicer person than you and I, so he would have sat and listened to that shit.
Although I believe Barrett less and less now. I mean, people don't know Barrett. After doing some investigation, I'm kind of on the ex's side after some stuff. I grilled Barrett in the office yesterday. I believe him less and less. I have turned.
Need I say more?
Oh, my God.
And the conversation, I think, was happening between Mbulelo and Barrett. And then before you know it, the whole office knows. That's how it spreads.
Yeah.
Did you hear the story? No. So wait, what's the story? Yo, and Mbulelo says, what's the story? It's done. And oh, I could just imagine, I was already picturing that 2 hour scene. Like the one is like, yeah, you, this is why, like, I didn't want to go out on that date with you. And then Barrett's like, yeah, but you weren't even, you know, you weren't paying for that date. Like, you know what? Get out of my house. Just get out of my house. And then he's like, no, before I leave, I just want to get this off my chest. And he's like, you know what? I don't need to take this. I don't need to take this. You know, that's what was going on in my mind. I was just like, yo, that's some love and hip hop. I wish I was there. Hey, I wish I was there.
Wow. Listen to this. This is Robin. She says, I didn't break up with my ex-husband. I just packed my stuff while he was at work. 26 missed calls. Yeah, Robin, you're totally sane. That's all I'm going to say.
What?
That is cruel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's hectic.
No, Robin, you're
your own husband.
This is madness.
Yeah.
Wait a minute now.
Exactly right. That's what we were talking about with Lebang just yesterday, about these people who ghost each other. You basically 26 missed calls. You're in psycho territory. Sorry.
No, man.
I'm going to say it. No one else is going to say it to you.
So are you saying the husband's crazy for calling 26 times? I think that's...
No, I'm saying she and they're both crazy. They should still be together because they both deserve each other. He's calling her 26 times and she's ignoring him 26 times.
Yo, but that's hardcore. No, Gareth, Lebang's cousin ghosting her is one thing. You know, when you're married with someone, there's so many complications. Like if you're married by law, the divorce, there's the house, there's property, there's this thing. And then there's just down to the human side, you know, in any sort of closure of relationships closure is often the thing, right? People are always like, if you're an adult, eventually, if you just explain to me why, people, even if they are angry, they can at least kind of find some sort of homeostasis. You know what I mean? Because closure is important in break. You can't just pack your bags with your husband. Unless the guy was a revolting monster.
That's why I'm saying. I'm going to say it again. Robin's a chocolate fireplace. That's not a sensible person. And her husband must have been crazy too. I mean, there's something going on there.
I got you.
You know, God bless you, Robin. But there we go.
I don't think the husband's crazy. Because if you think about it like this, if it's a typical day, you came to the office, you go back home and you're like, babes is not back. Let me call. And you realize it's 8 o'clock, it's 9 o'clock. You're getting worried and you think something would, because the first thing is not to think you've been ghosted. You're always going to go like,
shut up. First thing is like something terrible's happened to this person.
Exactly. So for the next couple of days, you're just like, yo, I hope she's okay. I hope yo. Then when it hits you, this person's alive and they left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, CBS says something useful here. CBS says, lawyers can handle the divorce. You don't have to see the bastard.
That's awesome.
Although Robin does say her husband was a monster and it was an abusive relationship. So maybe that explains some of her behavior. But still, yes, sis. I mean, listen, well done for getting out of it. Dr. Robin says, there are way too many people called Robin on this chat. My husband gets anxious listening. There are a lot. Yeah.
Imagine Dr. Robin's husband listening now. And he's in the, like, I don't know, in the middle of like work. And I, bloody hell, I can't believe she left me like that. Like, that's not...
Yeah, I don't remember that.
And he's too ashamed to call now because he's just like, yo, I called her too many times.
That's awesome.
Dude 69 says, my ex-wife came home and said that she was moving out on her own. I was so happy I even helped her move.
Yo, but relationships are so complicated. Eh? The more, because like being 35 now, people are starting to get to that first divorce. It's divorce age now for me. It's divorce season around 35, you know, because most people get around 28, 29, 30, that marriage fever hits. So the stories I'm hearing, Gareth Cliff, Simpiwe Mteto, and listeners around the world, the stories I am hearing of stuff that happens in the inner sanctum of marriage halls, I'm like, how do you, like the manipulation,
dude,
the stuff that goes on.
It's messy, there's some ugly stuff going down. And you know what? This time of year, it all bubbles to the surface because you're forced to spend like family occasions and the holidays and all of that stuff. And suddenly people are not prepared to just keep things under the blankets anymore. They bring it out. It all rises to the surface, and then you have those real explosions, which are not fun, especially not for the kids if they think everybody's playing happy families. Yo. Listen, Simpiwe, I want to solve a practical problem for you here quickly. So Simpiwe had her phone stolen recently. Mm-hmm. That was at the shops, right? You were in the shopping mall and you realized your phone wasn't in your pocket anymore.
What were you doing? Wait, hold on. When did this happen?
But hang on. No. Stop with your victim blaming. She went to the shops and she did what I'm sure has happened to a lot of people. She was probably paying for stuff or looking at stuff, put her phone down, or maybe she had it in her pocket and someone lifted it out of her pocket. There are some pretty sharp pickpockets here. Maybe she was careless, but that's not the point, Mbulelo. That's not what we're trying to solve.
Sorry.
She might lose the next one too, and then we'll stop being sympathetic.
Probably.
But for today, insurance will either pay out cash for your old phone or they will get you a better phone. So yes. You want to know, what should you do? Take the cash or take a better phone?
Yes.
And what's the catch? Is there a catch?
There's a bit of a catch. So I had the iPhone 12 Pro. And and what insurance is saying is that they don't have the stock, or whoever's supplying them, they don't have that phone anymore. So I could get the iPhone 13 Pro. Now, if I decide to go that route, I'd have to pay a bit of money, a couple of thousands, to cover the difference, obviously, which is, it's not too much, but it's December, guys. Like, that money, I could have been using it for Groove, you know, living my best life. Now I have to just pay for it for an upgrade of a phone. Or I could just get a nice lump cash payout, skip December, and figure out how to, you know, maybe I'll get a new phone or not, or whatever, you know. So I don't know. Phone, cash.
Okay, but if you... do you care about the phone? Because, I mean, listen, a phone is an important thing. It connects you to everything. It's the most useful piece of equipment any of us have ever owned. I always think if I didn't have a phone, or I had a phone that was really shit, or it was slow, or it was broken, or whatever else, it would be an irritation every day. So it almost helps to have a nice phone. But at this point, who doesn't want some cash? And if you're prepared to, like, buy a slightly cheaper phone, maybe have a whole lot of cash left over that could pay for quite a lot in December. I'm not sure. My advice would be to take the money.
How much money? Is it December changing money?
An iPhone 12? iPhone 12. It's like three months' salary, that shit.
Oh, really?
No, listen, those are expensive phones.
Then take the money. Take the money and get an awesome Android, I guess, is for half the price.
No, we're not doing that. We're not going to go to Android. That's already, I can just hear the bad advice already just spewing from you. I don't know. It's a bit of a, I really did like my phone. I had the iPhone 7 for the longest of time. So when I did upgrade, that upgrade was nice. You know, the features, the camera, it was just a really, it was a nice bad boy. And so if I have to now think of getting another phone that's not as, but then I'm like, I could also get better. I don't know.
Are you good with money? Because for me, it would come down to, will you extract the value of the cash? The value of the phone over December, would you do something valuable or would you just go nuts with the cash, do you think?
No, I need to, I definitely get another phone because, you know, I need to upgrade. And I'm quite good. I always say that if I need to save money, I'm one of those people, I can be very like strict and be like, okay, 10%, 30%, let's invest, let's do this. And then the balance that stays in my account, chief, I'm going to spend it. I already know me. I'm going ham. Like when payday in January comes, it might be zero, bruh. Cause I know me. I'm going ham.
Oh boy. Okay. Get the phone.
I really need to know.
Get the phone.
I need to know what I'm going to do with the money.
Get the phone.
Ask the right questions. Get the phone. Okay. Yeah. You know what? Jackson agrees. Get the phone upgrade.
Yeah.
Downgrade to an iPhone SE. But you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. Corona's boring says get the Samsung S. You don't want to do that.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No, so, Android.
There are people who. There are people who are saying, get the cash and buy the phone yourself.
You know why I've turned after hearing what you've said about your cash thing is we have quite a small team here. And the last thing I want to hear, and it's all about me and preserving myself. I don't want to hear about your cash problems in January. Cause now it's like an awkward environment. You know, our team's really small and tight here. Everybody really cares about each other. Next thing I'm hearing, oh, Simpi was having some troubles. Should we help her? I'm like, oh, I don't want to help her. She should have taken the phone.
No, the difference is I'd be able to look at the money and be like, okay, let me invest some of it, right? Mm-mm. Great. I can do that. Or let's downgrade and get a cheaper phone and then the balance. Because I am sensible in that regard to say, hey, if you're going to have money in your bank account, be smart about it for rainy days. So I'll save a bit of it, not all of it. I'm just saying whatever is left, and it might be a nice chunky bit, I would spend it all. Like, I already know me. It's gone, you know?
Get the phone. I'm not giving you $100 for lunch on the 13th of January.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Mbulelo.
No, that's a good point.
No, I'll come see you for help. Okay, cool. Thank you. I'll get the phone and still be happy.
Well, I mean, listen, we're trying to solve problems here, but I don't know that we can, because you sound like you're very undisciplined about what you do with your money.
Yeah, you do, and that makes me anxious.
Yeah, exactly. No, me too. All right. So a couple of things that I just wanted to get to before we wrap up for this morning and go to blind history. Apparently, Simpiwe also, since we're solving your problems, apparently you also have like a bunch of friends who are in relationships this December and you don't want to hang out with them. And I understand this. Like, if you're single, no, I think we can all understand this, right? 100%. If you're single, and your friends are in relationships and they want to be all coupley during the holidays, you don't really want to be around them. You want to rather be with the single people who are having a party and having fun and doing their own thing, right?
Yeah. Yes. So I was told that I'm being a bit dramatic this past weekend when a few of my mates, we kind of just hanged out at a friend's place. And when I looked at the numbers, it was like, get 2 by 2 by 2 by 2 by 2. I was like the only single person. I was like, I am not comfortable, guys. You guys can have a great night, but you know what? I think I want to leave. And they're like, no, but we haven't seen each other for a while. And you know, December, we always hang out. And I'm like, yeah, but this is a different December and I'm okay with you guys being in relationships. But right now, Chief, I'm single and I want to be with single people. And I was told I'm being dramatic. So I don't know. Am I being dramatic that I don't want to hang around with like couples for December? No, man. Nah.
I have strong thoughts.
Well, I mean, what are your, yeah, go. You can, you, I know you have strong thoughts on a lot of things, but this is, I want to hear this one.
There's always, maybe it's just my friend circle. There's always that one girl in the married couple relationship who just has to make it a thing like, when are you gonna, like, you're not happy. You're not happy. We know you're not happy. Like, geez, like, why can't we just gather and have a good time? Because when couples get together, they also think they are deputy Jesuses, all of them, you know, like, you've never known happiness, like, being together. And they all just become like a group asshole thing. Which on their own, they're great. But when they get together, it's like, yeah, it's just the, you know, the beauty of being in a relationship
Virtually this exact thing happened to me a little while ago because a guy who I'm friends with started dating this girl and we were at some event together and she was like trying to, you know, she was trying to pretend like she was a amateur psychologist or something and like trying to figure me out. Right. So she was like asking me, so why are you still single? I was like, oh God, here we go. She's brand new into this friend circle. She's like not someone I know very well. Now she's trying to like, you know, work me out. She's going to figure me out like by asking a few probing questions. And I was like, and she kept like hinting that she thought I was unhappy.
It took me
about 5-10 minutes to disabuse her of that notion and to also let her know that not everybody was as stupid as the people she's used to talking to.
I love that.
That they needed to suddenly like open, you know, some people it doesn't take a lot to get them to open up or to tell their stories because they're just so thrilled someone's paying them attention that they'll talk about anything. And I don't have like I do a show for 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, where we talk about all kinds of shit, including me. I'm not trying to hide stuff. So it's out there. And if you want to know, you ask me a question, I'll always give you a straightforward answer, right? This girl is like, no, but you know, even though you say you're happy, I don't know that you really are.
Oh, no.
I was like, honey, you've known me for all of like 5 minutes and you're going to try and tell me more about myself than I know. Even if you had God's prescience and like the intuition of the world's highest EQ person, you still wouldn't have a chance here because I've known you 5 minutes and I could see what you're doing. You're trying to like inveigle your way into the group and you're trying to like sound and you're trying to sound profound. You know, she's like trying to sound like she knows things and she's a deep thinker and all of this stuff. I was like bored to death after about 5 minutes.
But can I just give some advice from a heterosexual male on this incredibly important topic? Dear people in relationships, please stop setting us up with your terrible friends. Because what girls are actually doing, one thing I've realized... No, but tell me if I'm wrong. And I don't know if it's just for girls, but I can only speak for guys. Girls always set you up with somebody they want to be friends with, not someone that's good for you. It's always about them. They want someone.
Yes. Yes.
If they're a couple, that's the girl I want to go on holiday with. Not will you be happy? No. She had the same sandals as me, plus we were same sorority group or whatever nonsense. Yeah. No. Oh, we should set him up. Oh, he'll love her. They're both into science a little bit. Oh.
No. She's laughing because it's true, right, Sapiwe?
Been guilty of that. There was a chick we met and we're like, you're so cool. We want to hang out more with you. You're single. This guy's single. And the only way we know we're going to see you is if you hang out with him.
Oh, my God. But that's exactly right. Like they're terrible, terrible friends that they want to be friends with. So they set you up with them.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It's a bad idea.
So there's that.
All right. Well, okay, that's all we got time for this morning. We got to get to Blind History, and we've got brand new episodes coming at you next week and the week after too. And we're going to have all of that ready for you for Christmas. We've got season 6 well underway by now. This morning, we're going to talk about somebody who's really, really interesting. William the Conqueror, the guy who last conquered the island of Britain, and his descendants are still ruling the place now, almost 1,000 years later. So that's quite a legacy, I think. Yeah. William the Conqueror, who made the move across the English Channel in 1066, and his descendants are still running the place. Conquest is still the best way to assure that your descendants will benefit enormously from your decisions. And this guy was not afraid to make decisions and to do wild and dangerous things. And there was a bit of luck involved too, but you can hear all of that and more in this latest episode of Blind History, which of course is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. You can find out more about them by going to cliffcentral.com and following the links. Maybe your house needs some pepping up over the holidays. Maybe you need to spend a bit of that money. Maybe you need to buy some cool window dressing for your own special rooms in your house. Maybe you want to just make it look a little bit better. And Bulelo did. You got some Taylor Blinds and Shutters installed.
Early next year. So everything's been measured. We're good to go.
Oh, you're ready?
Okay. Yeah, no. Well, it takes some time to get produced, obviously. But early next year, we are on one. I'm not even getting out of bed. Like, it's a little Saturday. Let's get some light in
Beautiful.
Here. Double tap. We out here.
Beautiful. I'm
looking forward to it, yeah.
Here is William the Conqueror. A fleet of hundreds of ships approaches the chalky coastline of England. On board, under pointed helmets, are over 4,000 Norman archers, infantry soldiers, and knights, with horses stabled below deck. The fleet carries the banner of their leader, Duke William. It is September 1066. Over the next 2.5 weeks, a new king will be crowned, a new culture imposed, a new relationship between the island of Britain and the rest of Western Europe will be forged, and it will last for centuries. This is the story of the swarthy, fearless William the Conqueror, and it soon became the story of England. There is one king in English history where history begins for what we call England, later on the United Kingdom, and later on than that, Great Britain. And the king who they credit with having started it all wasn't really the first guy on the scene, but he was the winner of the last successful conquest of the British Isles. And it happened so long ago that it's actually remarkable this place hasn't been conquered since, and some pretty strong people have tried. And his name is William the Conqueror as a result. And the famous date that everybody can recite by memory in England, if you've been to school there, is 1066.
Battle of Hastings.
That's right. So this guy was born in like the real depths of the Middle Ages. This was when the Vikings had just started to lose their power and authority, and the fierce, frightening terror that they would instill in the hearts and minds of so many people in Europe. But Europe was becoming the Europe that we would know through the Middle Ages. And William was born to a pretty powerful man. His father, Robert, was Robert the Devil, they called him. Was a quite fearsome guy, a descendant of Rollo the Viking. That's why they were called Normans. And he was the Duke of Normandy. And he and William's mother never actually married.
And that's why in his earlier life, he was called William the Bastard.
That's right. And he hated that
name. Hated that name.
Didn't like being called William the Bastard. No. I mean, who would?
No, 100% right. So, and, you know, he hurt a few people that called him that.
Yeah.
But what I really like about the story is, first of all, you know, Roel is one of the people in history that I've really enjoyed. So he was the Viking that he came at the time, the heart of the Vikings, and they would always go and pillage and.
But didn't they even? They attacked Paris.
Yes, he went all the way to Paris. And then the king, the weak French king, as they seem to be mostly.
This is Charles the Simple.
Charles the Simple.
They called him Charles the Simple. He must have been very uninteresting.
Well, he was quite simple, and he just paid him off a handsome sum. Then he turned the tables. You protect us against any more Viking invasions, and I'll give you this piece of land. And that land became Normandy.
Right.
And he settled in there. Now, his great-great-great-grandson was William. So there's definitely good blood. On the other side, his mom's dad was a tanner. So, she had to help somewhere.
Her name was Herleva, right? And she was the daughter of this guy who he ran a leather business. And in fact, there's a famous story about how William was attacking a certain city because the people there were smacking leather against the walls to taunt him. And so he cut off all their heads and hands.
Yes.
As a warning. He didn't like this reminder that he didn't come from noble blood.
He was fiercely loyal to his mom.
And he was fiercely loyal to his wife later on as well.
Correct.
So actually, a rare example of a guy who respected and admired and looked after the reputation of women at a time where that was not the norm.
No, 100% right. Although, interestingly enough, she didn't pick him. So he picked her. But she wasn't really that interested.
So, his wife.
Matilda. And so she wasn't very interested. Not sure why, or maybe she was playing hard to get. But then what happened was she rode through town, and then he grabbed her by her two ponytails, and he pulled off her horse.
Well, how romantic.
Yeah, that's what he did. And then after that, they had 10 children together. So it's, I think that worked out well in the end.
A little bit of violence in those days didn't go amiss.
Yeah, it was almost like the caveman should drag people into the cave.
Well, I mean, apart from his questionable behavior towards women, William the Conqueror is most well known to us for what happened later on in his life.
Correct.
But he became Duke of Normandy at a very young age because his dad died when he was, younger than 10, I think.
Yeah, 8. He was 8 years old when his dad.
And running Normandy was no easy task. There were lots of people and the church who were constantly trying to usurp his authority. And when there's someone young in a position of authority, like being the Duke of Normandy, then there are lots of people who try to take advantage.
And they did. He obviously got people to run it for him when he was younger. King Henry of France was one of them.
Now, let's just remember, France at this stage was not France. France was just one of the kingdoms because Brittany was another kingdom in the northern part of France.
Correct.
Aquitaine was another kingdom. it was all very fractious. So King of France wasn't like you were this supremely powerful overlord who commanded everything from the English Channel to the Mediterranean. It was just a kind of province itself. But this guy had a substantial army, King Henry.
Yeah, and he helped a lot. So he basically stabilized it. And together with his mom's brother, who helped him and hid him in, it was very, I mean, you must know you're 8 years old.
Yeah.
And you need to survive. So basically his mom's brother got him through this difficult period at a very young age. Then he started taking control and, he was knighted still in his teens by Henry.
He's a formidable and a brave young man. 100%, I mean, by no means a, you know, guy who shirked his responsibilities and didn't mind a bit of a fight.
Yeah, he did. And his great, great grandfather was a giant of a man.
Yeah.
And he also ended up quite fat. And
yes, same thing happened to William.
And William actually was more like a bubble in the end, but
yeah, he was.
But he was a big guy, and he was very strapping when he was young as well. So he used to use his weight and strength. He was always first in the fights or there and thereabouts. It's incredible, led from the front.
So some of these chroniclers who've written about him described him as being very robust and stout and sturdy, and he could ride a horse and he could swing a sword, and he was basically unmatched on the battlefield.
Yeah, he was scary.
And again, fearless, which must come from the Vikings.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that he became the ancestor of all those kings after him on the English throne, all the way down to the current Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah, Queen Elizabeth, there's some
Viking blood.
Yeah, 100%.
Strong Viking blood.
Well, you can see it sometimes.
So this guy, after he'd more or less settled Normandy, which is not the most interesting part of his story, so if you don't mind, we'll breeze through it a little bit. He'd been promised by King Edward the Confessor, who was the King of England, a very saintly and devout, pious man who built Westminster Abbey and was obsessed with being godly and good.
And he was as weak as all shit.
Oh, useless. So he promised William, mostly because William and his father had protected them during the time that the Danes were invading and causing all kinds of chaos in England. Said to William, look, I'm childless. When I die, you can inherit England. Because he'd also been fighting with this guy, Harold, and his family, the Godwinsons. So William thought, cool, I'll inherit England. That sounds like a good deal. Sure, we'll look after you here in the meantime while the Danes are busy attacking. Anyway, the Danes eventually were repelled and Edward was made King of England. And he forgot this promise that he'd made to William and to his father. William didn't forget. And because Edward had become friends again with Harold Godwinson, he decided, I'll let Harold take over after I die. So he named him as a successor when he eventually did hop the peg. And this was not good. William was pretty angry about this.
But just before that happened, Harold was passing through his area of Normandy.
Mm.
And so he invited him, or sounded a little bit more than invited him, and requested that he make a promise that he will inherit, not Harold, but
so William was really making sure that everybody knew.
He wants to just cross the I's and dot the T's.
However, it didn't go that way, and William was pissed off enough to start planning an invasion. What had happened in the meantime is since Edward the Confessor had died, Harold was back to fighting the Danes. This is complex because Harold inherits the throne, but Harold's own brother Tostig is with the Danes. Mm. This poor guy couldn't catch a break either.
Yeah.
He's got William breathing down his neck from Normandy. He's just been nominated as the successor to Edward the Confessor. His own brother is working with the Danes.
Who've landed in
Yorkshire and are starting to move down towards London. So he rushes with his army up to meet Harold Hardrada and Tostig. He has to fight them at the Battle of Stamford Bridge.
And which he does well.
Apparently, this battle was something else. There was one Viking berserker who stood on the bridge and managed to fight off 40 guys on his own.
Mm. Yeah,
I want to know who that guy was. We don't know who he is. Yeah. He's lost to history, but it was one berserker. And eventually, Harold is victorious. He manages to defeat these guys, but now his army's exhausted. And he hears news that William the Conqueror is about to land in the south.
But what happened with William was things happened slowly in these
times. They didn't have telephones.
No, they didn't.
No, you couldn't WhatsApp the guy and say, hey, have you finished with Harold? Yeah, I'm about to land on your south coast.
But what happened was he was hunting when he heard the news that Edward had passed away and that Harold was now King of England. So he was massively upset. So he got his army together, his big gang, charged off to the coast to sail across. and the winds weren't favorable. Mm. So all that energy, then they waited for a month. Finally, after a month, the winds turned and then he popped across.
But it worked out well for him.
Yeah, 100%.
Because if Harold hadn't been fighting up in the north and then had to suddenly divert south,
it would have been a much different story.
He would have had a much bigger army and he might have been able to win.
Yeah, because it was already a close fought thing.
So William lands at the coast at a place called Pevensey, just past the White Cliffs of Dover, famously. And he heads across to Hastings. And Harold is already set up on a hill there called Senlac Hill, which is famous. You can go and visit it today. There's an abbey on that was built there by William in the end. And the fighting starts in the morning and it carries on all day. And William does this thing where, well, he didn't do it on purpose, but half of his guys decided to cut and run. And they run away straight into the cavalry, who then fight the shield wall of Harold's. And William reckons, oh, well, this is quite a good plan, because if I can make them think I'm retreating, then they break the shield wall, they come down from the hill, and then we can cut them up with our cavalry. He does it about two or three times, so these guys weren't very bright.
Mm.
And everything's going pretty well, but it's still quite evenly matched. Then the most decisive thing happens. Harold gets struck in the eye with an arrow. Goes straight through his eye, into his brain. It's famously depicted on the Bayeux Tapestry, which you can still see in the museum there. And that's the moment where everything changes. Because what are they fighting for if Harold's dead?
Mm.
And then William, obviously, he routs them.
But he was also close to routing he killed his brother.
Listen, William had to show everybody he was still alive at one point by lifting his helmet off.
Yeah, he had to say, I'm here, I'm alive.
Yeah, these guys thought he was dead at one point. They were going to exit stage left. So it was a very close run thing.
Yeah.
And frankly, if this is the conquest of Britain and the only conquest since 1066 and it came down to this closer thing, it's quite an achievement.
Yeah, agreed.
Exactly. After that, he establishes castles everywhere. He replaces the Anglo-Saxon nobility with his own Norman nobility.
But it wasn't easy either, because he kept these little rumblings and insurgencies everywhere. And then the Scandinavians came back
Poor William. So I say poor William, but as soon as he subdued England, Normandy would rise up. As soon as he subdued Normandy, England would rise up. And he never really put them all into one administration. England ran on its own. And for a long time, he had his brother Odo running things there. Normandy ran a different way. They had different monetary systems, different courts, different forms of law. He also had Maine, which was another province he had to run.
Yeah.
And
Britannia, he also acquired Britannia as well prior to that.
I think he got tired. I mean, administration wasn't – he liked conquering, not administering.
But the big thing was, like everything in history, the historians that are the detractors and the historians that love him. And the harrying of the North was something that some people have termed genocide. And, you know, that was really where he was cruel, etc. But they just kept poking the tiger. You know, if you try and read what actually happened, they kept poking the tiger. He was so mad. So he basically just took out the whole of York. The Danes couldn't come back because there was nothing they could live off. He basically just destroyed everything and anything in that area. And then they say he killed thousands upon thousands of people during that actual period.
They also say some of the people who don't like him, some of the chroniclers, said that he cleared vast areas just so that he could hunt there. Like the New Forest, for example.
Because he loved the deer or
something. Cleared people out.
Yeah.
Now, whether that's true or not, or whether those places were sparsely populated in the first place, is a matter of some conjecture. But either way, William was definitely one of these people who made things happen, whether you liked him or not. His problem also was his family. He had three sons. Two of them would become kings of England. The eldest one, Robert, was like a thorn in his side.
He kept trying to overthrow him.
He was, a real shithead. And, he went on the first crusade. And when he got back, he was constantly fighting with his father. And then his brother, William II, inherited after William I. And he wasn't very good at running England either. He was probably one of the most hated kings in English history. And then eventually his third son, Henry I, became, a proper king of England and married a Saxon princess. And from there on, things were a little bit more stable. But the story of William's death is also pretty horrible. They say he crushed one of his balls against the pommel of his saddle while on horseback. He was also, by that stage, quite fat. He realized he wasn't going to last very long. Gave William England, gave Robert Normandy, and gave Henry money.
Mm.
and then lay in bed waiting to go. And all his courtiers just left. He died on his own. Mm. There was no one else around when he actually died.
Yeah, because Henry took his money and ran. Right. They didn't stay long.
No.
All the sons, they were, yeah.
They didn't care.
Yeah.
And then he died on his own. And they say that when they were trying to bury him, William, in Caen, that it was a very big coffin and they hadn't made enough space for it. And they tried to squeeze the body in and it popped. Burst.
Yeah.
And apparently it filled the entire cathedral with a terrible smell.
Yeah, they all
Everybody ran out. This is not a very dignified way to go.
No, it's not.
But let's not remember him that way.
No. I mean, they said 25%, a quarter of the people in England are descended from William.
Yeah.
People in America who've come from England. It runs very deep, ancestry. And Gareth, you possibly are descended from him.
Definitely.
Yeah, because Plantagenet.
A couple of lines, yeah.
Yeah.
He was really the father of modern England. And he made England the place that it was. It used to be much more Scandinavian influenced in the years preceding 1066. But after 1066, the biggest influence on England was France.
Yeah.
The nobles all spoke French because of William. They had French laws brought in. They had different forms of taxation brought in. Real feudalism.
Because the Normans were very organized.
Mm.
So he brought that to England. He basically started the road for when England became a great power.
Yeah.
And the Domesday, I never know if it's how to pronounce it.
They say Doomsday, but Doomsday, you spell it Domesday Book, yeah.
Domesday Book, where it's still today, I mean, it's an incredible source of information.
This is a thing he commissioned, and you can still see the Doomsday Book. He commissioned this book, which basically records every landholding in all of England. Who owned it before? Who owned it after he conquered the country? How many chickens they had? How many cows they had? Mm. How much pasture they had, every detail was written in there. They say it was because he wanted to keep track of who owed him money. But he was very good at also putting his trusted and loyal people into positions of power. He created new titles and a whole new nobility. And those people are still largely the aristocracy of England to this very day.
Yeah, and like you said right in the beginning, he was extremely fair. He was way ahead of his time in terms of from the gender perspective.
He's better than anyone else at that time.
Yeah.
By today's standards, he would still come up quite short.
Yeah, yeah. But I think from that side, he was incredible. He had a temper, and you'll see that temper runs all the way through to Edward the first, second, third.
Yeah.
But if you look at the period that he was in, maybe it's a bit harsh to treat him only on harrying of the north as genocide or massive cruelty. He did have a cruel streak, but I think it was mainly due to, you just pissed him off.
Well, yeah, you can also still see his building projects because he built so many castles. The most famous of those is obviously the White Tower at the Tower of London, which is still as he built it. The central keep of what would become Windsor Castle was also built by him. And there are many other buildings around England which owe their origin to that period just after 1066. So you can go and visit the places that William would have walked through.
And Westminster Abbey,
he was crowned there, yeah. Harold was crowned there, and then William. And from William on, every English monarch has been crowned in Westminster Abbey. So there's an unbroken line of almost 1,000 years.
Yeah, that's why I love this guy.
Yeah, and he's also the inspiration for some of the Game of Thrones storylines because of this stuff he did to the north, the way he conquered, the way he sailed this huge fleet across the sea and decided to fight and take over the territory. And to this day, I mean, whether or not you are a fan of this, conquest is still legitimately one of the ways that you establish your authority over a place. And the current royal family of Great Britain, the current Queen Elizabeth II, takes her authority by conquest from 1066. She's queen by conquest. In her case, inheritance, but also conquest. So it's still a legitimate way for you to make sure you're in charge.
That's incredible.
Blind History is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. All the episodes are available on the cliffcentral.com website and app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. By the way, after he'd been buried and burst and all that stuff, he didn't exactly lie in peace, because there were about three or four times after that that the tomb was opened up. And during the French Revolution, all his bones were scattered all over the place. But they did find one leg bone. It's the only piece that's still left. But from it, they were able to deduce that he was quite a tall guy. He was quite strong.
Mm-hmm.
And we get all of that just from his thigh bone.
Amazing, eh?
Yeah. CliffCentral.com